In the years since its release, I've had the chance to hear a lot of reviews and a lot of responses to my documentaries. Most of them have been positive, but as I've said before, one tends to focus on the negative. There's also a focus on the nature of some of the negative comments, what exactly they find wrong. And while most of them are a matter of taste and preference, there's one criticism that has kept coming back over the years that I've spent an outsized amount of time considering. The complaint and observation that I've made a Talking Head documentary. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Peter Healy, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. When I set off to make the BBS documentary, it was out of a sense of duty and responsibility. I had a film degree and training under my belt, but my concentration was on making games and system administration. I only made a film because I was worried that no film was going to be made at all. And because of the engineering and planning I'd been doing as part of my job, I spent a very long time plotting out exactly how the BBS documentary would go. Because I thought the subject warranted not just coverage, but as much coverage as possible, considering that the stories and the people were slipping away. I visualized it as a series of intertwining conversations brought together by people all over the country, each of them contributing a small part into a thread that I would construct from hundreds of hours of interviews. This turned out to be very difficult, but a correct plan. I had designed everything so that a single person could do it. I could be the editor, the director, the interviewer, and the crew, while being able to fit everything into two bags and put them on planes, staying underneath the luggage limit. Everything was designed so that only I had to go through the overnight drives, the weird locations, the unusual time requirements. With money and a crew, everything might have been different, but I knew that I was getting neither of those during this production. Where I could, I shot people in front of their systems, their setups, their homes, to give you an idea of who the person was and the kind of outlook that they subconsciously built into the world around them. The BBS documentary functions not just about the story of the BBS told from eight different positions, but also a record of a kind of way of using computers that is rapidly fading away. We are definitely entering an era where not everybody will have what we think of as a home computer. They'll have a particularly complicated phone, maybe some sort of media system, and that'll be about it. Having folks with disk drives and monitors and tools all around their system, that may fade. I'm very happy to have captured what I could in the background of the film. When I finished the BBS documentary, there were a lot of responses to it, and I took to heart the criticisms of the concept of the Talking Head documentary. What exactly did that mean? I'd been very careful during editing to put together all of the phrases that everyone said, such that you could close your eyes and get anywhere between 90 and 95% of the information, because it was all coming to you as a long, threaded statement from all these different voices. You didn't have to look on the screen and have it all explained to you. You'd be able to almost put it on the radio and get most of the effect. Once I was secure that this was the case, I started to add in inserts and videos and different shots to illustrate what was being discussed. In a few rare cases, I had to put text on the screen to give you background, but in general, it was first audio, then video. It appears that for some people, that's not what they're into. People talking on screen, giving you their thoughts, their insights, is just not enough. This is more of a criticism in the modern era, where the ability to see documentary after documentary, giving thumbs up and thumbs down, and then moving to the next content if it doesn't grab you in the next few minutes, is commonplace. You only have so much time, and it feels like there's an infinite list ready for you. You only want a certain kind of show, and the algorithm will more than gladly give it to you forever. Into this realm, I've uploaded the BBS documentary into my YouTube channel, and I join a cacophony of voices that can range from essentially illustrated Wikipedia pieces all the way through to 4 and 5 interview combinations that tell a story very quickly in about 3 or 4 minutes. There are, of course, a bunch of channels that impress me greatly with the level of work they do. Usually the creator will put behind their video a mention of the months of work it took to produce something so well, while others, well, they're just algorithmic creations. But my films weren't made for this era. They were made to right a perceived wrong. After the BBS documentary came out, I was inspired to tell the story of an even more, to me, obscure subject, text adventures and interactive fiction. The film that people have seen, that is called Get Lamp, is the result of a wide-ranging amount of planning that I made as to what the film would be. I took the talking head criticism very seriously, and I sat down and asked myself the question, which I still ask today, how else could this story be told? There were two possibilities in how to implement this that I looked into. Both, I think, are not ultimately great ideas, but I did try to do one. The one that I did was interactivity. I figured if I was doing a documentary on interactive fiction where the audience was not passive, but feeling like they had a say in the outcome, maybe the documentary could have that nature as well. To that end, I came up with the idea that the DVD would be interactive and you would actually affect the flow of the documentary as it was going on. In the actual production, I realized this was a terrible idea. Audiences don't want to be prompted when they're taking in information. If they're watching a film that is trying to educate or entertain them, at no point should it stop dead and try to get your attention and force you to make a choice you may not even feel entitled to take. Everything coming to a screeching halt will do nothing but damage the relationship of the audience to the work. I had made a promise over the years of production that it would be interactive, so I cut the entire interactivity down to one menu. After it would tell primarily the commercial story of interactive fiction, you could choose to go back and see it from a different perspective, or move forward and learn about games a different way. I assure you, it is not pleasant. Enough that I ended up making a non-interactive selection from the DVD menu because most people would want to see it that way. I am, however, fascinated at the experience of going through this on the DVD. The film seems to hit an ending point. Everyone is sad about text adventures going away, and it switches to a different shot of a computer next to a lantern with a description on the screen that makes it seem like you've been reading about this documentary. Then it asks what you want to do next, and only a small percentage of people realize this is interactive. It's a menu you can affect. And then you make that choice and it responds. And I was actually into the idea that you could lose at the documentary, make the wrong choice, see the credits, and then be told you should really try to watch again. But like I said, nobody wants this. Ultimately, Get Lamp stays with the simple choice, and almost everybody who has seen it has seen the non-interactive version. When the DVD was pirated, it actually really screwed up the group that made the copy because you couldn't easily see which chapter had to go in which direction, and I had to tell them how to properly pirate that DVD. So that planning decision didn't work out great, but there was another approach that I worked a very long time on that, luckily, I never went forward with. And I've not gone into much detail about it with people because it's very hard to get across what I was trying to do. But here's what it is. I was obsessed with the idea that my documentaries would take on many of the characteristics of the subject that they were covering, hence the interactive menus. For GitLamp, I visualized a situation where the movie we would be watching would not be the GitLamp documentary. We would instead be watching an adventure film, a story of an adventurer and their discovery of puzzles and putting things together and interacting with a whole bunch of different environments and, in some way, going through real life, during which, in the background or over whatever they were doing, we were hearing people describe text adventures, their history, what they were about, what people remember about them, what they felt like, and then thinking about the future and what the very nature of puzzles were, all while we were watching a completely different film. Voices would come out over radios or going by in passing cars or on video screens and LCDs or written down on semi-animated paper sitting on a desk while the adventurer went through their own story with its own plot. You'd have to watch both at once. This idea, this grand idea, would have been an incredibly fun experiment, a real interesting way to put the movie together. And looking back, I believe it would have taken the already small audience for this movie and squelched it down in the dozens who could explain what they were looking at and why it was so special. There are lots of films out there in cult status trying something entirely new and in doing so completely alienating audiences until it takes years to assemble the amount of people to appreciate what was trying to be accomplished, because usually it doesn't accomplish it. I think that at best, I would have created an incredibly off-putting art project that would completely decimate whatever good name I had from the BBS documentary, and that wouldn't have done justice to all of the great people I interviewed about this subject. And this, I think, is the real lesson in here. I used to see all sorts of pre-production work on movies and animated films where you would see beautiful works of art describing environments and characters and costumes. Stunningly beautiful renderings of what these characters were, usually much more complicated, usually much more involved than what we saw on the screen. We would see a beautiful design of a warrior, but in an animated film, they were just a series of simply drawn lines and relatively straightforward coloring. And I would feel bad. I'd feel like there was failure there. But with the passage of time, I've come to understand that a lot of filmmaking, a lot of creative work, is the process, the painful process of finding boundaries and limitations from which to build your art. Unlimited vision usually leads to unlimited production and often failure. It's the process of creating a limited work from unlimited potential that is truly the process of art that is the most critical. And unfortunately, the side effect of that is that an audience or a critic or an observer or a disinterested party looks at the final work and assumes that this was as far as the creators journeyed trying to put together their work. The final work is the painful process of looking to a stunning vista and a journey that could never end and deciding to build a wall with just enough of this wondrous world to entertain them, inform them, and bring them into the world without making them feel trapped in a commitment without end. This is Jason Scott, Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoianu, Forrest Fuqua, Mark Pilgrim, Corey Thomas, Emilio Oliveira, Matt Reynolds, and Ernie Hershey, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. I have passed a very special milestone. Taking a set of orders for GitLamp DVDs, I went out to my storage unit and discovered I was almost out. I was down to the last few dozen given to me many years before. With incredibly close timing, I was able to ship out all of the orders, leaving only a small handful for my own collection before closing down sales at the GitLamp.com site. It'll become a museum and a reference library for the work that I did with it, but it is no longer a product. I've uploaded the full disk images to the Internet Archive, and I'll be putting up all of the GitLamp short films in full, non-interactive version online. It has been beyond joyful to be a filmmaker for 20 years. And as I close down the part of my life as a salesman of plastic discs, I thank everyone listening for sticking around to see what else I do.